I had stem cells harvested from my butt yesterday.
From your butthole?
No, there's...
Welcome to the Best Hour of Their Day podcast with your hosts, Jason Fernandez.
And me, Jason Ackerman. With more than 20 years in the business,
as both coaches and affiliate owners,
our passion is to help create world-class affiliates
and coaches by building
better
boxes.
Welcome to
the best hour of your day.
I mean, fuck it. Let's just start this show, everybody. We're here. Jason's butthole's bleeding.
Yes.
And we're here at the...
It's not entirely true, but it's not also...
It's not entirely false. We are here in Nashville at Best Hour Studios at the Gym Accelerator Summit. And exciting news, at the summit, there will be a raffle, at which point they will be giving away tickets where you too can spend several hours in a random hotel room with Chuck Carswell.
All right, there you go.
Loser gets it. Loser gets to spend the night. But it's Chuck Church.
It is Chuck Church.
What is today?
This will be my third day of Chuck Church.
It goes down anywhere, hotels or gyms.
You guys drove from Atlanta?
We did.
Together?
We did.
Yeah.
Did you drive in silence so you didn't?
No, we talked.
We talked the whole way, man.
We actually did talk the whole way.
Solved some of the world's problems. Anything? Ate a little bit. Yeah.
You solved world problems with Fern?
I mean, I made most of them and then he solved them, but yeah.
It was a group effort. We did good.
Well, I'm going to start here, Chuck. CrossFit's had its critiques.
Okay.
Right? And people that have come and gone and people that are liked and disliked, you are the only person in all of CrossFit that is 100% loved.
That's not true.
Is that true, Fern?
That's not true.
It's probably statistically impossible. However,
you think? Oh, so you're saying people don't like Chuck?
Oh. I mean, there's got to be at least one person. But we can all agree that there's something wrong with that person. The vast majority of people do like them some Chuck Carswell. Almost as much as Jason Ackerman loves Jason Ackerman.
Big fan. Big fan. No, I mean, you are just an incredibly loved, well-respected human being.
Well, thank you. I wish I could...
Say
the same for you, but I can't. Jay.
What do you attribute that to? What do you think... Where does that come from? If we were to take a step back, where does that begin to get developed in your 52?
I think this year I'm going to be 55, which means I'm in the division.
Wait, that also means you're 5 years
scaled
late to getting your life together.
Yeah,
because it was supposed to be 50. You're going to be 55.
COVID did that though.
He gets a couple bye years in there.
It's like a college athletics. Like you get an extra year.
Yeah, I was red shirt.
Yeah.
So you'll be 55. So
I believe so.
Where did that come from? Would you say that's always been an attribute of yours? Whether it was college football, your previous career, what about CrossFit then brought that out of you?
I don't know, man. I think if you got to kind of dig back, it's probably I was a pretty decent kid, you know, like probably my parents would say, yeah, he was a pretty good kid.
Well behaved,
pretty respectful.
You know? How many Carswells were there, siblings?
One sister. So
the two of you and
mom and dad. Yep.
And you grew up in Atlanta?
I grew up in the city of Atlanta till I was 10. Then we moved to Marietta, Georgia when I was 10, 11, somewhere around there.
And you'd say the parents would be like, did they call you Chuck? Did they call you Charlie?
Depends. If mom was pissed, she didn't.
What'd she call you when she was angry?
Charles Edward Carswell Jr.
But as a whole, she would say you were a good kid?
No, the reality is, you know, we've all got probably some trauma, drama, and stuff that we've had happen to us and things that we've done. And I just think somewhere along the line, I just, you know, burnt out a lot, large part of that stuff and just decided that, just want to try to do right by people. Doesn't mean I'm always going to make that happen, but
at a young age, you felt that way?
No, all right. So let's go deep then. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm 10 years old. Yeah. This has never been public information. So I'm 10 years old. Right. And, sitting on the curb, my dad had bought me a Daisy BB gun. I don't know if you guys know.
Okay.
Those.
Yeah. Pop. Yep.
Right. So I'm sitting on the curb and there's power lines where we are and there's a bird sitting up there and I'm thinking, you know, just shooting. And, one of the shots hit the bird. And he comes fluttering down out of the sky, lands in the grass. And, of course, you know, I'm not supposed to be outside shooting this gun. One in the front yard, you know, on the street. And so I jump up, run to the house, and throw the gun underneath my bed, that kind of thing, right? And I'm looking out the window, and I see the bird. Sure enough, another bird comes, lands right beside him, right? And I'm just like, oh, my God, I've broken up this marriage, this relationship. Birds, right? And I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, I'm crying and all that stuff. And then, down on my pillow, look up out the window, the bird's there. Down on my pillow, look up, and finally the bird's gone. And so I don't know if the bird got eaten or if the bird just magically flew away.
So you're saying you're a miracle worker.
I'm not saying I'm a miracle worker. What I'm saying is I've done some things in my life.
We say that he may have killed that bird. We don't know.
Also, he's also saying that's the worst thing he's ever done.
No, I'm not saying that.
Killed a bird
at an early age. Nah, man. That's, you know,
allegedly.
Allegedly.
That bird that got shot. Yeah.
Look, I think the reality is, you know, the reality is if you're in the people business, you're either going to be a dirt bag or you're going to be pretty decent. And most people find their way and it becomes obvious to everyone around them. So, I can't say that I'm a good person, but, I think, you know,
I'll say it for you.
Let the reputation, where it can speak for itself. And, you know, they're not always going to speak well of me. I know that.
You
know,
I've never heard anyone say anything bad about you.
That doesn't mean you just haven't listened and you haven't met enough people.
That's true.
That's the reality. Yeah. So
both of those.
Yeah, so
I don't listen.
I also try to be good at the things I'm good at, and the things that I'm not good at, I just try to stay, you know, stay away from those things as much as I can. So,
what's something you're good at?
I think I'm pretty good at the coaching thing for sure. Yeah. So,
but interesting. Do you coach much?
Not as much as I used to, for sure. Like, there was time where I was in the gym regularly doing coaching, and also on weekends with seminars and things like that. But now, I've got, you know, that one client still at my garage gym, and I coach him a little bit. So,
how many seminars have you worked?
500 and about 75, I think, somewhere around there.
And would you just keep doing them weekend after weekend?
I would. There were some years where we were doing 50, you know, 47, 50 a year.
When I don't know how it is for you versus Fern and I, when we get a request or go to work, what emotion do you get? 577.
I don't think it changes. I mean, you know, I probably look a little more diligently at the cities that I'm going to, what airports I'm going to be flying into, out of, you know, what's the travel going to be like, things like that. But the excitement's still there. Yeah, sure.
Chuck Church every Sunday.
Yeah.
And wow. So you have the most seminars out of anyone?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I can't think of anybody that's probably even close to that at this point. Most of the people that were on that same track have been off the road for a hot minute.
Yeah.
Like Nadia.
Yeah.
Boz.
Yeah, Todd Boz. Who knows how many Dave and Nicole did. They weren't quite as frequent back then, you know? So the seminars were occurring, you know, one or two a month.
Well, you started then and then hit the high point.
Correct.
And then just rode that for...
Correct.
So that means out of everybody that's... preached the gospel of CrossFit, you've hit the most people.
Yeah, I mean, in person, yeah, for sure.
Man, well, and also, you're the online level ones, right?
I did a few of those, yeah.
How many, do you have any idea? So, let's just try to do the math here real quick.
Oh, wow.
If we did, let's just 575 five
times, let's say 40.
On
can't,
average,
you can't do that.
Well, it's probably closer to 30. It's probably closer to 30 on average.
But then some of those back in the day,
when they had 55, right. 60. So I bet it's an average
of what?
Like 30? About 30, probably.
575 times 30, real quick, 15,000.
Wow.
Is that right?
I doubt it.
Check that.
But it's probably pretty close.
575. Yeah, that's probably 18,000 ish.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, but you know. You know, to the point that I was trying to make earlier, like, you know, I try to, I've spent all of my life trying to look for the thing that I was good at, right? Like most people, right? You want to be good at something, you find something, do that thing, and just be great at it, right? Mm-hmm. I went to school to be a teacher and a coach, and then walked into the classroom for student teaching, and I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. I'm not built that way.
At Georgia?
No, yeah, at the University of Georgia, yeah. But I found this thing that happens on the weekend, turns out it's 2 days, teaching and coaching, and, so took me 20 something years to find it, but now that I found it, it's kind of the jam.
So from the bird shooter at 10,
yeah,
mm-hmm. you obviously got involved in football.
I did. Yep.
And you were very good at it.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Well, good enough to play.
We were talking about high school on the way here. We were living our glory days. All-star games.
What's your best moment in high school football?
Best moment in high school football? State playoffs, senior year. We are playing McEachern High School.
And what high school
ranked,
are you?
Walton High School in Marietta. And they were ranked top 10 in the state, that sort of thing. And we were supposed to lose by, I think, 15, 20 points, something like that, and scored a couple touchdowns. And last couple.
You did?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I was a football player, man.
No, but I mean, you just said, like, you scored two touchdowns in
at least two. I think two.
And did you play both sides of the ball in high school?
I did not, except for this game at McEachern. The coach put me in the last play. They were driving and about to tie the score or go ahead, and put me in the game, quarterback. Threw the ball, and I just went and got it. So, yeah, picked it off, sealed the game.
Wait, so you got an interception?
Yeah, interception, yeah.
I'm really shocked that football. You know what that is. Amazing. Yeah, this is really good.
I'm trying to follow. Yeah. Like, I literally never played a game of football.
I don't know. We know. Yeah.
So you had a couple of times, but that was your best game? And then did you go on to win the states?
No. We went the very next week to LaGrange, Georgia, and got the brakes beat off of us.
But but you played well enough in high school. University of Georgia is a great football school, right? Yeah. Like, that's all. Yeah. And
recent national champs.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Twice.
And you played with Goldberg?
I did. Played with Bill Goldberg.
I forgot about that.
Sure did. Yeah. Yeah. He was a defensive lineman. Yep. And I actually changed positions, went from running back to defensive back in college. And
did you make that? When you got there, did they make that shift? They're like, hey, we're going to put you on the other side of the ball.
No. So I came in with some incredible running backs, like first-round draft choices in the NFL. So Tim Worley, who went for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got Keith Henderson, 49ers. Rodney Hampton, New York Giants.
Okay.
And then following that crew was Garrison Hurst, who ended up at the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, okay.
So these are the athletes.
Some studs. Yeah, okay.
And so after my redshirt year, I started doing the math, and it's like, you know, if these guys stay all the way through their college careers, then it's some point in time I might get to play, but that's only 1 or 2 years. I'm going to be on the field right now. So I handled the punt return duties, used to do the punt returns for the team. And then I made the switch after my redshirt year. I went to Coach Dooley. And
you went and asked him?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So instead of running the ball, you're the guy trying to
attack. Correct.
Good job.
Who was your biggest influence in football?
Biggest influence in football while at Georgia or just when I was coming up?
In general.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Walter Payton just because of his work ethic and his workouts. He used to run heels all the time. And
what's his nickname? Sugar Daddy?
Sweetness.
Well, that's close.
Sugar Daddy, something totally different.
Yeah, I mean,
I knew it was
kind of. It was candy. Yeah. Old sweet tart. Yeah, you're like, what?
But I meant more so from like a coach perspective. Who was like, what coach influenced you the most?
Oh, wow. So obviously I've been around great men my entire life. And when I say great men, I'm talking about like this moment.
Particularly right now.
No, I've had some phenomenal coaches along the way. So you start off with Kay Ellenberg, who was my Pee Wee League coach. Like, he was the one that wouldn't let me just do the things that I was good at. He kind of forced me to try to, you know, do something different when I was running the ball. I had a spin move that I used to make all the time, and it was the exact same way every single time. And he caught on to it and said, you know, hey, don't do that. Do it the other way. Like, try it a different way. Not the greatest coaching cue, but, you know, he got me to attempt something.
That
but
other way.
Yeah. So, do that. Just different direction.
Yeah.
But he must have saw something in you that young.
You know, I mean, you know, he's a leader of men. I mean, a young man anyway. So, you know, he saw some ability for sure. Because, I mean, I was pretty good, like you said. Like,
were you playing Pop Warner? Like, what's a, like, how early did you start put on pads? Yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah, I was 10. I think it was pound ball back then, right? So, like, I was 80 pounds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's some weight classes. Yep. Yeah,
80
yeah.
pounds at 10 years old?
Yeah, is that big or little?
I was 91 at 18 years
old. 90, you're 91 last week. What are you talking about?
It's true. So, your Pee Wee coach?
You would have been playing with the 11-year-olds at that
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
Crush those 11-year-olds.
Yeah. So, Pee Wee League, yeah, of course. My high school coach, Steve Jones, was obviously, he's the guy that, you know, I hadn't played defensive back since I was in Pee Wee League when I got into high school. And he's the one that, you know, had the foresight to put me on defense in that playoff game. And lo and behold, I end up in college doing that exact same thing. So that was a great one. Then, of course, I got a chance to play for the legendary Vince Dooley at the University of Georgia. I got a couple of years with him. Followed up with Ray Goff, who was a quarterback at Georgia and the head coach there. And then had a little stint down in Miami and got a chance to be around Don Shula. So,
you know. So you got drafted by the Dolphins?
I did not get drafted. I sat in my family room with media TV personnel for two days.
So you were waiting, when you see people in the draft?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was 2 days then, so it was, you know, I don't know, Saturday, Sunday.
So you really have no idea. You're just hoping.
Yeah, and back then the internet was not a thing, so it wasn't like you could, you
know. Just TV.
Yeah, yeah, it was just TV, and, you know, hopefully you have call waiting, so.
Did you?
you know, nobody get on the phone.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So did you, were hoping to get drafted?
I was and projected to be drafted between the second and the seventh round. And
how many rounds is it?
Back then it was 12. And
yeah,
so,
it was a lot.
So
what is it now?
It's like seven.
Seven? Yeah, that's what I say, seven or
so
eight.
So it's
yeah.
like round 10, no call, 11, and then what happens after the 12th?
We turn the TV off, and I turn and look at my dad, and I was like, what happened? Like, you know, we had projections. I had an agent the whole nine yards, and, you know, I had third-team All-American, second-team All-SEC. Like, I should have, you know, had an opportunity like that, and it just didn't come, and so I asked Dad, what happened? He said, I don't know, son. Like, just don't know what happened. So, you know, fortunately, all the media stuff had left by the time, you know, the 10th, 11th round came around. Nobody's
hanging
out.
People were there waiting.
Well, there was one guy that had come. We had wings, I think, and some other stuff. And so we had a little, you know, mostly family, but, you know.
So, and then what happens? You go to, like, walk on?
Nope. And a day passes, 2 days, and then, you know, they're filling gaps from all the players that are left over. And the guy from the Miami Dolphins called and said, hey, you still want to play football? Said, yes, sir. So down to Miami I went within about 48 hours, something like that. So
how was – that's got to be tough.
Which part?
That, like, oh, now what do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
What, in that moment?
Like, had you considered – because I know there's certain points in my life where I had not considered past that singular moment.
Sure, yeah.
How much had you thought about that?
Not at all. Like, it was not it was all about that opportunity. Second and the seventh round, there's five additional rounds.
Right.
This thing is going to happen. It's just a matter of when is it going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, major letdown, of course. But I hadn't thought beyond, you know, my aiming for 4 years so I can get pension at the NFL. That was really it. So
yeah. That's where you're hoping to play 4 years?
Yeah, 4 years. Yep.
Yeah, so pension is at 4 years.
Yep. And the average career is
like 3.74 or something like that.
So when you didn't get drafted, in your mind, what were you going to do?
I don't know that I even thought about it beyond that moment. Like, I was literally, you know, probably just going to keep working out. And because that window of opportunity is so small to be able to make it to that level, that I probably would have just dedicated my time to trying to still make it.
Yeah. Like, you're not like out at that point.
Right.
You're just probably not going to get you probably get practice squad or something like that. They might sign you for a short term.
So you go, well, what'd you get at the Dolphins?
Yeah, I had a contract, 2 years, 2 year contract. And it was the initial contract, but made it through training camp. Actually went to mini camp, which is like 3 days to kind of start it off, and did so well at mini camp. I got invited back with all the players that had been drafted that year. And so I'm like super excited. Like, this is really going to become a reality. And I got the chicken pox at 20.
First of all, I don't think black
old.
People get chicken pox. Chicken pox.
It's weird that you hadn't gotten it to that point.
That's the real problem, right? Yeah, is that I hadn't gotten it. Yeah, so, 22 years old, man.
Who gave you chicken pox?
My nephew, yeah. So, yep. 22.
Did you have chicken pox parties when you were growing up?
I remember.
Like somebody's kid, like, everybody over to Johnny's house. Like, let's get this shit over with.
I was getting old. So my sister, like my, you know, my half sister. So I didn't see her a lot, but when she got it, my mom was like, you got to go to your dad's. She was like covered. And then I was just like, I had a few. Yeah. Like I didn't have it bad. But so
I had it bad. You know, supposedly the older you get, the worse.
It probably almost resembles shingles at that point.
I've never had shingles, but yeah.
I've seen a couple people had them. I'm like, ooh, okay. It looks rough.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Not permanent scarring, but it was pretty aggressive.
But that was the end?
So I got the chicken pox, I think 2 or 3 days before I was scheduled to go down there. So I didn't get, so probably more like a week because, I didn't get to go early. I showed up on time with everybody else. And so I won't say a nail in the coffin, but that was another major setback in the opportunity. So
I don't know if it's healthy to play the what if game, but
yeah, go for it.
Do you think how much of an impact do you think it would have had for you had you been able to get that? How much extra time would you have had? Like how many, is it days? Is it weeks?
It was at least 2 days, like 2 days, if not three.
What do you think the benefit would have been there?
You're just ahead. That's it. There's just no way around it. Right. Like, you know, 2 days.
Like playbook and everything. Yeah.
Not only the playbook, but additionally the relationship building that you have the opportunity to do with the coaches there.
Without the
rest of the team, it would have been.
Those are just the draft picks or is that everybody? Is it the current roster plus draft picks?
Yeah. Okay. No, I think it was just the early drafts because they were.
This is a pretty small group of people. Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense now. Okay. Because, yeah. I mean, what's a NFL roster?
53.
I was going to say 60, but yeah. Okay. Okay. That makes more sense where you're probably looking at. Less than 10
Maybe
guys?
10, 12.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah okay. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you, was that the, like, no playing beyond that?
No, I mean, obviously I got down there a little later on and then went through the preseason and then got cut 3 days before Hurricane Andrew hit Miami. And so, you know, I ended up back home. They had plans on bringing me back a lot sooner, and that plan got pushed, and then I ended up back down there in October, there for a week, and then got sent out again, and then ended up getting another contract towards the latter part of October, early part of November, and then stayed through the playoffs that year. So, yeah.
So what is this, like late 80s?
Yeah, yeah.
And
did you play at all? Like, how many, like?
No, it was spring of 92. Special teams, 92. Right. 92 is when I ended up down
Special
there.
Teams?
No, nope. Got no field action. I got injured the very next offseason. Tore the rectus abdominis in my stomach. Whoa. So I had actually won the short shuttle, you know, the 5, 10, 5. Was the first athlete.
It's now called the pro shuttle. Yeah.
And I think they changed it a little. They did something different. I don't know. But pro shuttle is
different now.
Hey, on that note.
5'10". It's the 20-yard shuttle. So,
oh, okay.
5'10", 5.
Yeah.
On that note, who do you think would win in a sprint? Me and Fern.
How short?
40.
40-yard dash?
Even that.
He's trying to figure out how to break the news to you, dude.
Yeah, you probably were.
Yeah. I'd give you a shot, but not a good
You think
shot.
I'm overconfident? You look, I feel like you see me go a little bit.
Yeah.
No,
that's why I'm
I know Fern won the summit. I know Fern won the summit workout and all this weekend.
Cassidy was carrying most of that weight. I was just like, just keep me in the
I've
game
got
there,
this
buddy.
Delusional belief that I can beat him in the 40. Maybe we'll set it up.
It's real. No.
So every time you'd go home, you'd go like back to your parents' house?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I was fresh out of college, man. I didn't have an apartment. I had a couple dollars in the bank, but you know, it wasn't like I had a major contract. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're talking 92, so I don't know, the contract was probably with incentives, you know, quarter mil or less, you know.
That's
the contract, not the signing bonus. Right. Signing bonus was, you That's know, the upfront you, money right. and stuff. So.
And then were you just like, okay, this football dream is not happening?
When did I get to that?
Yeah.
So, you know, the rectus abdominis tear the very next year, the sprint, you know, I think it's off season workouts. We're down there running around in the grass, leg slips out from under me. I try to pull the leg back through, pop, I feel it. Should have had on cleats, didn't have on cleats, that kind of thing. I'm the guy that's won the 20-yard shuttle, so I can't let anybody beat me while I'm in tennis shoes. So anyway, go get the rehabilitation for that. And then, you know, was with
is that where you, I think you told me you went to, did you go to Birmingham for that?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I talked about that at some point. Yeah.
So that was later though. The Birmingham was way later. The dolphin surgery, I stayed in Miami.
Oh, okay.
But then to your point, when did I realize the football thing was over? I had been drafted to play with the, NFL Europe back in the day. And so, that was going to be my opportunity to try to work my way back to the NFL. 3 days before we're scheduled to get on the plane to go to Amsterdam, I'm playing for the Amsterdam Admirals, wearing shirts, t-shirts, helmets, you know, it's kind of a walkthrough. Quarterback throws the ball, that run down the field, my ball, my ball, my ball. I jump for the ball. Safety comes across the field, runs into my knee, grade 3 MCL tear.
Oh.
Yeah, and so.
That's rough. Yeah. I did that in college my freshman year. That one hurts.
Yeah, yeah. Stood up, and, you know, the knee won't do, it'll go this way, but when it starts doing that thing, it's just, yeah. It just
locks up, and you're just like,
ugh. We talk about that in the squat.
Yeah, we do. The valgus knee position.
So that was it.
Yeah. So, no, then I ended up in Birmingham. I was at Health South with Dr. Andrews and rehab, did really, really well. But, you know, it's an 8-week rehab on a 10-week season. And then in Europe, nobody's sending you a $5,000 ticket to get over there. So, so that was, it was starting to wind down after that injury, you know. So now I've got 2 injuries on my books and, you know, not a lot of field
plus
time.
Plus the chicken box.
Plus the chicken box.
That was the real one. Yeah, they're like, this dude got the chicken box. Get rid of him.
So I got 3 injuries on my books now. Yeah. And then so I did get a chance to go back with the Dolphins shortly thereafter. They brought me in for a tryout and gave me an opportunity to come back to the team. And we're doing the fitness test. And back then it was a 300-yard shuttle across the field back 3 times. Yeah. And so, you know, they told me it was going to be 2 and ended up being 3 on the day of the test. But, you know.
Yeah,
I'd already prepared for it, so passed the test, good to go. But very next morning, coach wants to see you. Bring your playbook.
Bring your playbook. Yeah.
That means you're done.
Yeah. Usually when that.
Yeah, usually.
You bring your playbook. You already know.
Yeah. Turn it in.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That's when I knew.
I feel like there was a lot of, and that was it, and you never gave up.
Well, look, like I said, that window of opportunity, once that thing is very, very short, and you've got to maximize your time, maximize every ounce of your ability, all of that stuff, because every single time the sun goes down, boom, that window is closing. And once it closes, you can go in the backyard and play football, but you can't.
Yeah, if you're in the league, you have maybe 3 years. Sure. If you're not in the league.
That's like the average,
you could
get
like a, what's a dude from the Rams, Cooper.
Cup.
Yeah, Cooper Cup. Where like you might get pulled out of the grocery store or something like that.
That's rare. Those are anomalies for sure.
So, and then you're like what, mid-20s at this point?
Yeah, I think I was 26, 27. About
that. At what point did you meet Shirley?
I met Shirley shortly thereafter. So I had just come back from rehabbing in Birmingham and was living down in South Beach and at a buddy's condo while I was transitioning back to Miami because I wanted to be down there full time. So I met her when I was down there. Yeah.
Love at first sight?
No, not love at first sight. I mean, she's beautiful, but I mean, come on, man. Like,
but you've been married nearly 30 years.
Yeah, it's 27. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we just saw her. Right,
we saw her before we were
headed out too. So
she still looks like a million bucks.
What's your give everyone best marital advice?
Best marital advice. I don't know, brother. Every best marital advice that I've received or that
I've
heeded or
not many people get married once.
Yeah,
if they do, they don't make it 27 years.
Yeah.
Kids. I mean, you've traveled. She's traveled. You're doing.
Yeah.
You're doing something well.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to have this thing early on in our marriage that we used to do. We used to
sex.
Not. Yes. Early, yeah. Early
I remember those days.
Yeah. So we used to not go to bed angry. Like that was a big thing for me. And every time I left the house, I used to always kiss her regardless, you know, regardless of how things were going. So, you know, as we've gotten a little older, more consistent, it's probably more like a high five, a fist bump, or
it is
a pat on the butt. Yeah. Kind of thing. There's always the love tap. So, I don't know, man. Best marital.
I think that's marital advice. Don't go to bed angry.
It's work, bro. That's it. It's work. Yeah. I'm not easy to live with. Let me tell you why.
Yes.
You know this. You public personas, right? You guys are in the public. Kind of.
This room feels pretty
more
crowded.
More me than Fern. Yeah. I get it.
And, you know, sometimes the closest people to you are the ones that take the most heat from you when you have downtimes, you know?
Oh, so, my wife is a saint.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
well, you got a good one, too, then. That's good.
Oh, I'm never getting rid of that one.
Yeah, no. That's good. You got the better end of that deal.
Yeah, I definitely married up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very so, anyway. Unusual.
What, if you think about that, so was that a total of, like, roughly 2 years in the NFL?
Yeah, they didn't give me credit. They didn't give me credit for the injury year. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're 2 years in that ecosystem.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm always curious, like, you know, the locker rooms are different. The coaching staffs are different. You know, obviously didn't play past college, but you go from high school to prep school to college. And at every stage, it's very different.
Yeah.
You know, the dynamics are different. What were some of your bigger takeaways from, obviously there's this is a business component of that, which is like probably the biggest piece of it. Yeah. But like, do you remember anything you're like, I'm holding on to that one past this.
No, there's probably some things that I tucked away, but there's no like, smack the table on this one. But I will tell you this much, the business aspect of that thing was very obvious. College is one thing, but that whole you're a number, what have you done for me lately kind of thing, that's prevalent throughout the business. So
you have to get like a big contract before that monkey goes probably away, off your back. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then too, the performance part of that thing is probably equally as difficult when you do get that big paycheck. But the business side of it was really, really tough. But the other thing was just work at your craft, man. It's like, you know, practice is never going to be enough for you to be able to really get good at that thing. And so you've got to spend some real additional time on your own, honing that skill, working that thing. So
it's funny that as you're talking through that, I'm just thinking about doing this job.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not just going to be a good trainer. Yeah. You're not going to be a mediocre trainer if you just show up and coach classes.
Yep. You've got to get reps. You got to watch film, get feedback, right?
Dude.
Like all of those things are
film doesn't lie, baby.
No.
Well,
the eye in the sky does not lie.
On that, similar to CrossFit, what were your best lifts when you were a college football player?
Oh, best lifts? I was benching well over three, so probably 340, I want to say. I got up to more, but that was afterwards. That was after playing ball.
Did you do a combine day?
I did not.
What's that? How many reps at 225?
Well, that's part of.
I did. We did a pro day is what we did. So
okay.
We didn't do a full.
Similar pro. Tests?
Similar
roughly.
Tests.
Did you do 225 bench?
No.
I did one at 225.
That's usually, it's more for like linemen.
Yep.
We're not. Who doesn't do it? Quarterbacks don't do it.
They can do it. I mean, quarterback.
Yeah.
It's not.
Typically they won't, but.
Correct. Yeah. But we didn't do one on site. We didn't do at Georgia. We had a bunch of teams come out and some players from. They were from the metro Atlanta area and also Athens that had gone on to play at Tennessee and some other places come down. And so we had about, I don't know, five or six teams down there. Dolphins were not one of them, interestingly enough.
Oh.
So, we ran 40, maybe ran the 40, some shuttle.
What about
stuff.
What was your best deadlift?
We didn't deadlift. We had a kid get hurt at University of Georgia my freshman year.
Lots
we didn't
of power deadlift. Cleans, dude.
We didn't deadlift at all. We pulled sleds.
So squat?
And, we squatted a lot. Yeah, for sure.
You think all of that helped your CrossFit?
No question. I mean, the baseline strength that I had coming into this thing was pretty solid. So. Well,
what's interesting about you is you did have a brief, like, career as an athlete in CrossFit. Brief, right? Like, but you were a little older. But, I mean, it was quick, and then you were into training, where a lot of the OG trainers were more competitive. And not that you couldn't have been, but you had like 1 or 2 years at like the regional level?
No, that is not accurate.
Did you have any years at the regional?
I had, as a judge.
But I felt like you had one.
No, we did a video that Chuck was going to try to go win the games, and it didn't work out. I never even, didn't even make it.
That docuseries got killed. Yeah.
Five minutes in. Yeah. This is gonna, you did the Uneven Grace.
I did with Mike G, Jenny Orr, and Jilly G, I think.
Yeah. Okay, so let's.
Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. Right?
I am so impressed by what you guys are doing. I'm impressed by the team that's been pulled together. I'm impressed by what you're helping the affiliates focus on. And I'm impressed by with the team that you've pulled together, the breadth and depth of knowledge and advice and that you're giving affiliate. And then I'm impressed by, I've been privy to the team meetings, and I've impressed with the attitude, the care and concern, sincere care and concern about all the individuals that are coming in for this. It goes way above and beyond a transactional pay us for some sort of consulting and we'll give you some solutions. And I think that's what CrossFit has always been about. It's been about giving a shit and a sincere shit, you know, and speaking the truth and being unapologetic about it, you know. And I found that here this weekend, which is refreshing.
Fill us in that gap between not going pro and CrossFit, because that's about 10, 12, 15 years?
Yeah, quite a bit of years. So, yeah.
You were in banking, weren't you?
I went into a mortgage.
I did mortgages
for a while. Yeah. So I think that happened right at about 2005, 6, somewhere around there. So I worked in the mortgage business for a couple of years, and then my cousin had a brokerage, and so I went and worked a little bit with him and started a personal training gig. So I used to drive around Metro Atlanta with equipment in my car and knock on doors and go train people in their homes and stuff like that. So.
And then was it CrossFit? I want to say Soul, but it wasn't Soul. What was the, where there's a bunch of them in the Atlanta area?
It was a small franchise back then.
But what was it called?
Sons.
Sons, yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. And you were part of that? Yeah. Or that's where you did
training? I was one of the trainers there, yeah. I ended up at a gym in downtown Decatur, trainer.
What was your first exposure to CrossFit?
My first exposure, we had, I guess the franchise owner at the time came in with a workout that he explained. Later I found out was Helen. And we did it on a treadmill.
A lot of people back in the day did.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I did.
Helen on the treadmill, kettlebell swings, and pull-ups on the cable cross pull-up.
Well, nobody had access to a pull-up bar where you could also run, unless you were at a track that happened to have a pull-up bar. But that was like,
yeah, there was a park by me that you had to get to it.
Okay,
like it wasn't you parked there; like you had to work your way to the pull-up bar, which is in the middle. So, your first exposure is Helen.
Yep.
And then
it was explained. It wasn't explained properly. Like, you know, we did the workout, the reps and the distances and all that perfectly, but it wasn't like go as fast as you possibly can to get this thing done. Yeah. And so, you know, I think the previous time that he told us was something like 13, 14 minutes, something like that, that the guy that had done it.
This is relatively slow.
Correct.
I mean, not at that time. What? That's actually like, okay.
I guess.
Cause this is what year?
This is 2006.
Yeah, because, I mean, when did OPT throw down that 7-something?
Shortly after.
Yeah,
like 8-9.
Quick.
8-9. Yeah, there was a very, very steep upward trajectory once that stuff started hitting the internet.
Yeah, but I got like 12 minutes and 47 seconds, something like that.
You're a big guy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that big back then. But
I mean, you're over 200 pounds. I mean, Helen's not a big person's, right?
It's not. No,
it's a light bell. It's pull-ups and running. You don't want to be too big.
Yeah, but 12 minutes, 47 seconds. Like, that's, you know, for the first time
that's
for a
good
guy who's in fitness.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like,
you don't think that's good?
No, I mean, put it this way. I could have gone faster, but I didn't realize
the intensity.
I didn't realize the intent of the workout was to get it done as fast as you possibly can. So 13 minutes is up on the board. We just pace it to where we beat 13 minutes. Like,
that's what I'm saying. It's probably realistically probably not sub 10. If we're like, let's go.
But I think that's
not for me, but back then that was a fast time.
I think if you don't think you could have done that at that
point? Yeah, I probably could have.
Maybe 2 minutes off of it, like a 10-ish.
10, 11, 11, probably closer.
Back then, I think for a lot, like my first fight gone bad, it was like, let's go upstairs at the gym, down, like you're just doing a minute at each station. But it took 40 minutes, not 17.
But that's the cool thing about our program, though. It's like, you know, you talk about these times. It's like, yeah, I think I could have done 2 minutes faster. Well, great. Do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
why don't you go ahead and prove that?
Try that. Yeah, it's not as easy as it looks.
So it's 2000.
I don't say that anymore. I'm like, I think that was right. That was just the perfect pace for me.
2005.
That's 2006.
2006. Yeah. You didn't go to the 2007 games, did you?
No, I didn't.
So when does it go from a trainer at this franchise to, because very quickly you were part of the staff.
So 2007, I went to my very first level one in Jupiter, Florida. And that was when, you know, Mike G was starting to get deeper into CrossFit. Jenny Orr was at
Jenny
level
was already
one.
In the game. Yeah. Yep.
So Johnny McLaughlin, who
Jane,
yep, Jane Mack. Yep. So, there was quite a few, quite a few of the.
And that was she living? Was she? Still. She was living in Jupiter.
At yeah, that that's where she's
yeah,
from.
Yeah, she's from there, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she was down in Orlando for a little bit when she was at UCF.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
She wasn't a cheerleader when you were with the Dolphins, right?
No, I try to tell that story, but that Jenny's like 12 years younger than me.
So. Yeah, but so you go to what brought you to that first level one?
Yeah, so that. They were talking about trying to change some of the programming in the business that we had for the, you know, for the clients. We had the franchise was a small group personal training. So there's about 8 people in a class and we rotate them around to stations. So it had a pretty good concept back then. Right. But they were looking for better programming, get better results, all of that. And so they found CrossFit, obviously went through the workout Helen. And then 2007, July, I believe we went down to our level one. And, soon as I was there, I knew I was like, this is it. I got it. This is the jam. I need this. Should have had it when I was playing football, but you know,
who stood out to you?
I had all the OGs there, man. It was, you know, I had Nicole Carroll was there. Annie Sakamoto, Brendan Gilliam was there. Mm-hmm. Coach Glassman was doing name, almost all the lectures and stuff. I think Dave was down there too. So
I think a lot of
TJ Cooper.
I was going to literally ask you because we're in the CrossFit East.
Yep.
This is how you know you're old school. When you have a cardinal direction for your name. Yeah.
You ever hear Glassman tell that story? He's like, I feel whoever's married to you, like, hey, honey, they want to do CrossFit East. There's going to be 4 of these one day, you know? So, But what was the moment for you at your level one that when you say, like, this is it?
I don't know. It was probably not a definite moment. It was just listening to Glassman explain fitness, right? And you know, we, you know, as great a university as the University of Georgia is, there was a fitness certifying body that had their presence in the fitness there, and it just you know, I didn't see nearly the results that I probably could have, you know, with that style of training. And so listening to him explain it was like, god dang, it just sounds so damn right, you know. And you know, the increased work capacity across broad time and modal domain, and I'm seeing that and I'm going, yeah, it should be measured, it should be numbers, it should not be like 40 yard dash, right?
Dude, that lecture changed my life.
Yeah,
that lecture legitimately changed my life. I was like, oh, this all makes way more sense now.
Yeah,
this is what I'm gonna do. It's like a really weird
And then experience. The other thing too was the feeling I got when I hung out with those folks, man. It was like they actually, you know, like to hang around with me and stuff. Like they don't seem like I'm bothering them.
Yeah,
and they're pretty damn cool. Annie Sakamoto made fun of me the entire time because my outfit matched back in the day. So she did
Adidas, full Adidas.
No, I didn't have Adidas. Is that what you wear? My Adidas.
Yeah.
And then you finish your level one.
Finish my level one. We go back to Decatur, and I'm all fired up about CrossFit. We should change this damn program. It's not my business, but you know,
I remember you guys like seeing. But I found CrossFit shortly after.
Yep. So I ended up attending 2 additional level ones, and they were in Decatur at that facility. And the second one was, I believe it was the second one, which is where we did Uneven Grace. So.
Oh, and when you attended them, were they inviting you there, or was it just because it was at the gyms you were?
It was just at the gym, and you know, back then you weren't supposed to have hanger arounds. You know, you weren't allowed to just hang out and stuff. But I was, you know, I was DJing and stuff, so I just
I got the playlist, guys.
And then you did the.
And then I'd help out. I'd try to jump in a small group and get some time and stuff like that. So
the Uneven Grace. That was that your first video on CrossFit?
Probably, yeah.
Probably had to be.
You can find it. I'm sure Nate, Cody can plug it in here somewhere. Yeah. But you did essentially, you had like 115 on one side, like one, well, not 115 on one side, but like a 35 on one 45. Side. And then did 30 reps.
Yeah. When Tony Budding, who was the media guy back then, taped our hands.
Oh, I remember that,
You had to grab it in a particular spot. You couldn't just shift over.
No.
Yeah. So he forced that, which was pretty interesting detail.
Well, that's like, you know, as you're saying that, just like some of the experimentation in the early days just to get to where we are now, the constant variance was, you know, borderline reckless.
Yeah. Borderline reckless.
Well, also just unnecessary.
Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting if you go back to that time frame, like the things that they were experimenting with, it wasn't just movements or like, What if we unevenly loaded this? Like, how would that change the workout? Just nobody would do that. Everybody would think you were a crazy person who did that. Or like, that guy clearly can't count, you know. It's, but they were just like, let's see what happens, you know. Like, turns out it's fucking harder.
Yeah. I didn't stand up all my reps then because I didn't know how to actually do a jerk as well as I do.
I mean, listen, you're still doing a lot of work.
Yeah. So that's 2007.
That was 2008. So the 2007 was the first one, and then we did two more in 2008.
And did you think you'd go to the games in 08 when you can still just sign up?
No, I mean, I could have. I mean, I could have just signed up and gone out there. But, I mean, you know, look, this whole expand the margins of your experience and do the things that you don't really like to do was not one of my things. So I didn't like to run very much, not very far anyway. And so I missed out on a lot of fitness because I didn't quite cherry pick, but I just didn't work as hard at that weakness as I probably should have. So, didn't qualify.
And then what's the jump from I'm attending these things?
Yeah.
Because I remember meeting you in South Brooklyn in 2008. Yeah. You were part of the staff.
Yep. So after that, at the third level one I was at, Nicole said, hey, you know, why don't you go back here and watch Jenny's group? It was the deadlift group. And so three movements, deadlift, sumo, deadlift, high pull, medicine ball clean. And if you got anything to add, add anything. And so she talked all the way through the deadlift. I didn't add one thing. She talked all the way through the sumo, deadlift, high pull. I didn't add one thing. And then she got to the medicine ball clean. And there was an athlete that was having some problems curling the ball, right? And whatever communication she was giving to this athlete wasn't working. And she just turned to me and goes, you got anything? And I said, yeah. I said, treat the medicine ball like a baby's head. So rub the baby's head and don't spin it. And he's like, got it. Very next rep, boom, he opened his hip and didn't spin the ball. And Nicole
that was the birth standing. Of Chuck
Carswell. Yeah. I was going to say, that was like the first sermon.
Yeah, the first sermon.
That was it.
I tell you what movement I would have not been jumping in on, the med ball. I'd have been like, nah, I'm good.
I was content standing there watching her. I mean, Jenny's a damn good trainer, so I was totally content watching her do her thing. But the fact that, you know, I got that opportunity was pretty
special. And then they were like, you're hired?
No. Nicole was just, she just nodded and walked away. And then
you're like, fuck, what does that mean?
Yeah. And then
I still feel that way, by the way.
Yeah. And then a few weeks later, they were going to a seminar at down in Brunswick, Georgia, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. And, you know, I live in Georgia. They called and said, hey, Nicole Melman, you know, give me a call or something like that. I don't know how it happened, but she's like, hey, you want to come down and intern, help out? I was like, yeah, come on. Sure. Love to. So I drove down and was helping out, was planning on helping out at the seminar during the workout, stuff like that, and taking notes, learning more, you know, all the stuff we do. And Coach Glassman added 15 new participants to the seminar, and I went from standing.
Here's your group.
Here you go. Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah. You know?
Don't old fuck pat it up. Yeah.
Good old pat on the back, and you know, it was just a disaster. So
over those years, we've all seen it, but especially back then, a lot of people come and go.
Yeah.
What do you attribute you being around for 20 years now?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you got to have a skill set. So, I mean, I have a pretty decent skill set. But the second thing is, man, I'm telling you, I've found the thing I was just destined to do. Like, this is it, you know? So.
Well, I was going to bring that up. So you and I were just at our trainer summit. So Northeast, Southeast. And one of the things you brought up there, which I think is, it's for sure pivotal in my growth, you know, and something that I've seen you do many, many, many times is, you know, you were talking to the group about, hey, just understanding the people on the other side of these interactions, you know, and hey, as soon as we open that door, like that's when it starts. And that's something, it sounds weird, but like you can lose that. Like you can lose that, that enthusiasm. Like people can turn into just numbers, right? If you do anything long enough, like that is a real thing where it's like, all right, I'm just going through the motions. But that has never, at least not to my observation, been any, you know, you've always been one who was preaching like, hey, connect with these people, find something out about them. You know, let's see who we can check in on tomorrow. Always checking on people and, you know, not just the participants, but the trainers as well. And that's the whole kind of like care, like give a shit, you know? And I think that's probably a huge component of why you're almost 600 deep into this thing.
Yeah. And I, obviously, you know, my experience at my level one was remarkable, and I we only get one shot to make that a first opportunity for the participants that come. And you just can't have bad days. You just can't. You got to leave that stuff in the parking lot. Nobody gives a shit. You know, nobody cares. They're not coming to save you. You got to pony up and do the job. And, you know, there's plenty of time for us to have downtime. You know, we can burn it down. We can go to get a cheat meal, do all that stuff. But that experience can be life-changing, not only for that person that's sitting in that seat, but what happens when they open a gym, talk to somebody else, they, you know, hire people, all kinds of stuff. I mean, the ripple effect of what can happen at the level one course is just something that can't be overstated. And so for us as the seminar instructors, we have to recognize the magnitude or the weight that's kind of on our shoulders to do that. And I just, my team, good, bad, or indifferent, don't care if you say things slightly wrong or miss a line here. You know, that's not what's important. What's important is, are we communicating this thing across to the people so that they get inspired to go do something with it? And, you know, if that's happening, then, man, we're being successful. So, yeah, it's cool. It's a cool gig, man. It's a cool job.
There's worse jobs.
Yeah, for sure.
I think what you don't understand, what we talked about earlier. So Fern and I interact with hundreds of affiliates, yep, and thousands of coaches, because all of their staff are part of our curriculum. Mm-hmm. And whether it's our staff of Lindsay, Todd, Steve, Pat, I think you correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you see, like, let's say this, you have become the personification of care within CrossFit, okay, right? Like, when people talk about a connection, it's like they're trying to channel their inner Chuck Carswell.
Yeah. Okay.
So you might not see it because they leave the seminar, but then we see it when they, especially those that decide they want to become better trainers.
Yeah.
So it's.
Thank you.
You know, I think you said like that, ask one more question.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's become a.
No, he said I didn't say that.
No. But you said it just now. But I mean, that's become like attributed to you.
I probably stole it from somebody too.
We all have, but I mean, that's like, I think you, we said earlier 15,000, but that's like expands and expands and expands. But we see it on a daily basis with our clients. They're like, what would Chuck do?
Well, I hope, well, you know, thank you for that. But I mean, you know, look, so let's get a football analogy here, right? Like, you know, I had all these yards in college, in high school, college too. So still some records out there, that kind of thing, or at least still in the area. There's one or two that might linger out there somewhere. But the point is, all of those things are set there as just an opportunity for somebody else to exceed them. Like, literally, that's what it's about. And so, you know, I think back about what Annie, Nicole, and that crew, Brendan Gillum, all those folks, those trainers down there, what they did for me at that level one. And the only thing I'm interested in is just trying to make sure that other people get that. We are now the Annie, Nicole, and Brendan and that whole team, you know? That's who we are.
You know, what generation do you think you are?
I don't know. Of trainer, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you're referring to them as if they're generation one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like you're...
I'd probably be three or four somewhere.
No.
Probably two.
No way. Pat Sherwood would be...
No, I think you and Pat are the same.
No,
right?
No. Pat was a mentor of mine along with Andrew Thompson and some others. So, yeah, but not...
That's another name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Let's talk about a Chuck Carswell moment.
Okay.
2009, right? At the CrossFit Games.
Okay.
Annie Thor's daughter.
Yeah.
Is struggling to get her muscle up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's video of you. I wouldn't call it so much judging as coaching her.
I didn't coach
her. It was cheering.
Cheerleading. You know, back in the day, it was very, you know, the games is like on ESPN and all that. You know, now it's very different. Then it was still, was that still at the ranch?
That was at the ranch. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, 2007 was essentially like the Woodstock of fitness, mm-hmm, people are drinking. 2008, a little more like people are on hot mats. Doing
what was the last year? 2009, 7, 8, 9, and then 10.
But what was that moment for you at the watching Annie and helping her get her first muscle up as her judge?
The hardest thing about that moment is knowing that I'm a coach and I'm in a position to be a judge. I want to help her get that muscle up, and I can't say a damn word.
So you weren't helping her?
No, it was body language. I think everybody else.
You were doing like one of those?
No, I didn't do that. I had my arms folded because we weren't allowed to coach, and I was trying to give her some body English or something.
That was when it was like still allowed a little bit of cheerleading coaching, right? Like a little bit of go.
Yeah, I mean,
you're just excited to see her get it. And just like gave the old fist bump.
Yeah. So,
what's your favorite moment judging? Was that it?
That's got to be up there with one of the tops, no question. I had a pretty good one with Rich Froning. Somebody took a photo of it and sent it to him. It may have been Tony Budding, but it was in the, I guess, the tennis stadium in Carson.
Yep.
Where he was doing pistols. And, you know, we had a pen. Back then we used to have, you know, pens write down everything in the middle of the workout and count reps and all that stuff. And so apparently somebody caught a shot of him doing a pistol with me.
Oh, that's cool. So, gotta find
that. Is cool, actually.
It's a pretty cool
dig that out. So,
yeah.
You know, more recently, you're like you're a head judge.
Yep.
But when you were just a judge, did you ever have any arguments with a competitor?
No, I was pretty, you can ask Chase Ingram about my, he's got a pretty good memory of one.
Did you argue with Chase?
No, I didn't argue with him. I just, you know, I have a tendency to want to set the standard before we ever have a problem.
When Chase was still competing?
Yeah. You know that story or no?
No, tell it.
I do, actually.
So anyway.
I could see him getting a little fired up though.
Yeah, I dropped an F-bomb on there. So anyway, he walks out onto the mat. He's kind of looking out, you know, enjoying the crowd. And I stuck my hand out and to introduce myself. I said, "Hi, my name is Chuck." He said, "Hi, I'm Chase." I said, "I won't F you if you don't F me. So let's just get this thing done." So it was basically,
fair enough,
yeah, right. It was a kettlebell swing thing. So just trying to get him right. So
yeah, that was the year that it was the
standard body.
That was a mess.
Yeah, I think that was it.
God, that was a mess.
Anyway,
some of the regional events were a disaster in some of those scenarios too.
He's a much better storyteller. Mm-hmm. He tells that story.
So he is a good storyteller.
But you've been involved in so much. You've never owned an affiliate.
I did. Yeah, I owned an affiliate in 2008.
One of the Sons or a different one?
No, it was the CrossFit East Decatur.
I was gonna say I wasn't sure if it was Decatur or.
And, What happened?
The travel thing started to pick up, and I lived in Marietta, Georgia, and instead of driving to Decatur, Georgia, 45 minutes, you know, you could with a little bit of traffic, you could easily turn into an hour and 15 minutes. I unfortunately opened a gym where I had some influence, and it was on the wrong side of town, so it's just too far away, and so I just burned myself out.
Especially leave Fridays, home Mondays.
Yep. And several times I got stuck in a couple of times I got stuck in Canada, couldn't get out, or, you know, you get in delayed late and, you know, 5 a.m. class, and I have to call my business partner and be like, "Hey, you're going to have to take that 5:30 a.m. class." So, not a fun call to make.
How many countries do you think you've worked in?
Great question. I have the old passport, but I haven't gone through and done the count, but I'd probably say 15, maybe 20.
That's a pretty good count.
Yeah.
Maybe 20, somewhere around.
Just with CrossFit.
Yeah.
And aside, so you've owned an affiliate, judged, obviously longest, one of the most tenured seminar staff. What are some of the other roles you've had now?
So I'm also the seminar excellence manager. So
what does that mean?
Basically, seminar excellence, short answer would be like quality control for seminars. Just ensuring that the training staff is executing the way that we want to and providing training where we need to make sure that those things stay at the level that we expect.
What are you doing well that when you showed up in 2006 and you realized I want to do this, that still happens in 2024 with completely new people?
Yeah, so the transference of culture is a big deal, and we're doing a pretty damn good job with that.
No, I agree,
Yeah, and not only that, but the feedback from the participants is saying that as well, and then, you know, to the tune of 95, 98%. I mean, it's like ridiculous off-the-chart numbers for the quality that they're getting. But I would also say the content has been pretty tight. Like, nobody has fidgeted with that, messed with it. So even though...
Yeah, it's gone largely unchanged.
Small tweaks along the way.
A little less zone.
So, but essentially those two things, transference of culture, just the, you know, we're chasing excellence, man. Like, you know, if what you did yesterday still looks good today, you hadn't done much today. So you still got to...
Hey,
you know,
what happens if it works? Do more of what works.
Yes, exactly. Do that again.
You know, a lot of people that listen to this aspire to be on staff.
Okay.
What would be your advice?
First of all, it's a phenomenal job, no question. But my advice would be, it's not the only job. So you can chase that and make that your dream if you want, but you need to know there's other ways to have impact in this community. Be prepared. The feedback that you receive from folks around the community is strong, but it's a job interview, and everything that you do there is going to be judged accordingly. So you're either up to the task or you're not.
Yeah, I think Kristen Bowen, she would say, hey, if we were evaluating, just like understand when you're making this decision of whether you pass this person on, it's like that's probably the best version of that person you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
So if you're not immediately in the hell yes, wow, then the answer is no.
Yeah.
And it's just like I always think about that when they show up and I'm like, am I immediately going to say yes? So that's just based on your timeliness, how you interact with the team. Like I have to continue to get those yeses as you're there over the course of 2 days. And like every no is not one no.
Sure.
It's like, oh, it's almost an absolute no.
Right.
It's like, don't do anything that you're going to get a no on.
All right. Well,
it's a great group. It's a select group of folks. No question. To be able to get there is a phenomenal accomplishment. I think they're some of the best trainers on the planet. No question. But they also embrace feedback tremendously well. And that's, I know you guys know this, but that's one of the things I harp on all the time. If you're not getting feedback, you're missing the mark. And, just the same way you hone and sharpen your skills, if you're a punt returner, defensive back, you're a skater, you're a musician, artist, whatever it is, you need that exact same level of intensity towards honing your skill and getting feedback as well.
So on that same note, so we just spent a day and a half with 30 seminar staff in Atlanta. Obviously that was literally over 7 hours ago.
Yeah.
Do you have any takeaways from that? I know we're real fresh off of that, but
yeah. We're probably a little too fresh to formulate, great thoughts about it. But, if I were a business owner and I had a group of trainers that were in my business, I would make sure that there's time for training, but there's also got to be time for relationship. And, these trainers, we never get the chance to get together in large mass like that. And the fact that Don, Dave, Nicole, the team has created the opportunity for us to do that means the world. It's like years ago, we would go to these, the trainer summits and, all over the world, they'd fly in and get together. And I could probably live a full year just off the energy that was generated.
Just go run through walls after that.
It's just unbelievable. So, I would just, the big takeaway for me is people have to be together. They got to be together to do the job, but they also got to be together just to be together.
As you're saying that, I'm thinking about a couple different things inside of the community that probably don't match. Okay. Community culture is something we all probably throw around a little bit too liberally, if that's a good way of saying it. And as you're saying that, I can think of many, many times, at least I'll speak for myself, but I could probably speak for a lot of people where we focus on the community, 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 and then we leave out the facilitators of said community, which is the coaching staff. Like what's your members are tight. How tight's your team?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Culture wins.
Yeah, but it's just, collectively as a community, I'm like, that might be where we're falling short, honestly. As box owners and leaders, we're like, oh, you're leaving out, and I'm just pontificating as you're talking about that and thinking about, and we try to do a good job of that at the box, but now that you're saying that, we need to do better, because I realize coming fresh off of that, how important that is. And and you and I talked about it a little on the way here that it cannot be overstated the importance, at least in my personal opinion. And I've said this before. I think whatever CrossFit wants to do, whatever they want to achieve, wherever they want to go, whatever the number is of people that they want to impact, that road is paved with red shirts. And then underneath that is all the coaches at all of the affiliate
owners. No question.
All over the world. Yeah. And in order for that to be the case, that's got to be it's got to be cohesive. It's got to be really, really well built, and it's got to be, you're going to put a lot of miles on that road.
Yeah.
So it's got to be well built.
Yeah. And keep in mind too, I mean, you're dealing with people just like we, you know, as coaches, we talk about the clients and, you know, as much as we love them, they all come with their stuff. You know?
Right.
You know, if you're going to have a great coaching staff, you're going to have to work through some challenging times. You're going to have to work through some challenging personalities. You're going to have to maybe get some people on board and then maybe get some people off board, not be a part, but there's no question it's work. I mean, but that work can be done in ways other than just, the traditional meetings. It can be done in things like, you know, some more relaxed ways.
Well, I think of all the the most impactful conversations I've had with you or Jomo or Cabo or any of those people were not in a seminar setting.
Mm-hmm.
They were outside of a seminar setting, just talking about it and working through it, sitting at a bar somewhere. Probably too late,
probably.
But yeah. And then I'll speak for myself. I probably don't extend that as much as I should as a leader.
Well,
at the box.
Well, there's, you know, area of improvement there for you. So, yeah, but I think that's an untapped, I won't say untapped, but that's probably, to your point, one of the ways that we could have probably a bigger impact on our clientele is by making sure that those that are providing that service are squared away, good to go. And, you know, we're still asking one more question, peeling back layers with those folks as well. So, yeah, for sure. Uh-oh.
And
what?
You're kicking around.
Gears are grinding in there.
How
break the teeth off those things.
How do you stay on?
What do you mean?
I've seen you up until very late and then up very early.
Yeah.
I've seen you work the games. I've never really seen you tired.
You didn't ride with us in the car.
who drove?
I did, yeah.
But I mean, certainly not at a seminar. Like,
sure.
It doesn't matter what time you go in, you are on and ready to go. But I mean, the only time you've ever, I remember one time the games ended and you showed up to the after party very, very, you were like, I sat on the edge of my bed.
Yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. But I mean, that was the only time I was like, oh, Chuck gets tired.
Look, hey, you know, we're very fortunate. The folks that are around us, that train us and all that stuff, they a lot of these folks have, you know, put their lives on the line. They're military personnel. They don't want to hear that you're tired business. What are you talking about?
But you can, like, I mean, I don't necessarily say, like, I'm tired. I just go to bed, right? Like, I'm saying, like, you
he will, just literally just disappears. Yeah.
You're so, the last one.
Yeah, but
in Denver, we were in Denver. He's just walking out of the park. I was like, are you leaving right now? Are you just not going to say goodbye? He's like, oh, I figured I would talk to you later. I was like,
and here we are.
Yeah.
3 days later. Talking. Yeah.
It's always been that way, actually. You know, the kind of the last one to leave, be around. I was that way in high school, man. We'd end the game, and if there were kids out there wanting to talk and all that stuff, I'd be the last one. My parents
signing autographs.
I wouldn't sign in autographs in high school, but yeah, it's just always been that way. I mean, there are people I've met along the way that I've probably looked up to and, you know, had in my head. And the last thing I would ever want for somebody that's getting the opportunity to get this experience is for me to come off being an asshole. You know, like I thought that dude was cool, but he's a real asshole, you know? And so having said that,
yeah, what's the old saying? Like, don't ever meet your heroes. You'll be grossly disappointed.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, I've just always been pretty generous with my time for the most part. So.
What did your parents do right for you to be like this?
My parents, how much time you got, man? I mean, we can get into parenting in 101 and we can start talking about discipline. We can start talking about, you know, how things were done.
How many notes you got on
yeah,
here?
Yeah, bro? Right. I got quite a bit. Yeah. But
they did something right. Like,
dude, it's the South.
Other
man.
Than the bird. I'm a poor bird you killed.
They didn't do it. They didn't have anything to do with that. Buying the gun, they might have had something to do with, but not the bird. no, man, they set a great example, bro. My parents are just good people, man. My mom and dad been married over 50.
They're still around?
Yeah, both, yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Dad's,
they live, like, right down the street from you, don't they?
Yeah, a mile away. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, so you still have a tight to this day.
Yeah, tight. Yeah. Talk to them probably once or twice a day sometimes. And probably see them, you know, once or twice a week. So, we're always together a little bit. So yeah, it's cool. Yeah, they're good people. So
what have you done well as a dad?
What have I done well as a dad?
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
You'd have to ask my kids that, man. Don't let me tell you that. You'd have to ask my son and daughter.
Do you think you treat them the same way you treat participants?
No, I think parents have high expectations of their kids, and we probably are a little more difficult on those that are closest to us. No question. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not tough on my kids, but, you know, I have high expectations, man. Like, and I will tell you this, the hardest thing that they have to deal with is trying to meet those expectations. But I'm also a pretty gracious dude too. Like, you know, I can help you along the way. I can show you things. I try to do that, but you know, if you really want to know the true story, don't ask me. You got to ask them. Like, seriously.
All right, we'll get them on.
No, don't get them on. You can go talk to them, but don't put them on.
What's been one of your biggest struggles as a coach or being on seminar staff? Like, what's one of the things that you've struggled with the most? You're like, oh, this is going to be, like, really challenging for me to deal with.
Leadership is tough, and so...
That's not what I thought you were going to say, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well...
What did you think you'd say?
Well, I just feel like he's
digging a little further. Yeah. But when I say leadership is tough, I'm not talking about trying to help people achieve. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about having to step back to let others take the forefront. That part's hard, not because I don't like sharing the forefront, but because I worry about the dulling of the skills. That's the real challenge
for yourself,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
There's the selfish component to that is that I worry that my skills will become more dulled. Yeah. They won't be as sharp.
The instrument will be blunt.
Correct.
Yeah.
So
one time to do that, we were in Orlando and one of the participants goes, let me see if I can remember the question. What's the difference between CrossFit's vision and mission? And Chuck could not have stepped out of the way faster and handed it to me. And because Jenny remembers this, we'll joke about it. And I was like, the thing about ethics, like it was like Billy, I was like, we're all now dumber for having it. It was like, you just threw me under the bus on that one. But
look, you were awarded no points, and may God rest your soul.
I think I figured it out, but I was like, what's happening?
Pat Sherwood was notorious for that. As I started to develop my skill, right, he wouldn't maybe throw that deal.
You remember that one?
Yeah, I do. I remember well, something around that. I don't remember the exact question, but I remember going, that's a good one for Jay. Yeah.
On that leadership note, you know, you and Joe talked about it this past couple days. I can't recite the mission statement verbatim, but which I should probably be able to do that. That concept of the custodians of the willing.
Yeah.
And that really like popped out to me and it's not stated that way in the mission statement, but that was like the extraction of it. Hey, that's part of our job is to be the custodians of the willing who want to use this methodology that is CrossFit. Yes. And how that applies to that idea of leadership is part of that is stepping out of the way and like letting people, you know, get better, fail.
That's why I step out of the way for you.
I genuinely appreciate
me
that. Yeah.
Leading. I wish you would realize that. I'm leading you guys.
Yeah, we're guides for this thing, man. Like we're, you know, the custodian is a great word for that, but I mean, we're literally just guiding people on this journey. And then hopefully at some point, you know, especially when you talk about the level ones, level twos, they can pick that baton up and just run with it on their own. But yeah, if you're willing to step across the threshold of the door, come to the course, get involved in the program, do whatever it takes to get started, then we can help usher that forward.
Yeah. I remember I talked to, at the games actually. And when we interviewed Nicole and I forget how it came up, but we were talking about, you know, CrossFit is kind of by definition exclusive because it is only for the willing, you know, and that willing piece is a better way of stating it, that like, hey, it's here for you. If you're willing to try and willing to put your ego aside and willing to go through the process of being fitter, learning new things, putting yourself out there, failing, expanding the margins of your experience, helping other people. That's not for everybody.
No, it's not. And usually the folks, and I don't have any statistics on this, but just, you know, as we were talking on the way here, like, it seems like if you have had that kind of experience in another area of your life, it only makes sense when you show up and you start right. doing this CrossFit. And so there's an instant connection to it. And so you're not fighting against yourself to kind of get, you know, to walk the walk, if you will.
Yeah, it seems very natural. Like very you and I were talking about, just like sports.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah. You're like, oh, this, I recognize this. This feels mm-hmm. the way that I would imagine it would. I'm always curious. So on the topic of feedback, when you look at, and I think you're a perfect person to ask this question because you've done more seminars, arguably stood in front of more people than anybody, delivering the level one kernel, where do you think we have the greatest area for improvement as a community of coaches?
I think we could probably, I had to nail it down, I'd say we need to major in the majors, not in the minors. Right. Like there are certain things that are just a part of what needs to happen that we should be focused on, not get bogged down in some minor details. So I would say that with movement initially, right? Learn as much as you can about the movement, start big, and then finally work your way down the small. But major in the majors. Get people consistent, get them foundationally strong in the movements, and then get them to, you know, eat right. Done.
If you're an affiliate owner, what, if you were to make that more specific, if you were, yeah, what do you think that looks like? Cause that's, I mean, that's really where the rubber meets the road, right? You go to level one, I'm going to go back to an affiliate, whether it is mine or whether it is somebody else's. And I have to take that and say, okay, well, how do I major in the majors? Like, what does that even look like?
Yeah. So again, I think what happens too often is we try to turn the ship way too fast, right? I want to come back and I want to do all of these things right away. No, let's just get good at getting people to show up, making sure they have a good experience, teaching them the movements, make sure that they get some feedback, they get a high five, and then they go home. We get consistent walking through that, and then we add one more thing to it, as opposed to coming back and dumping out the entire bucket on them and expecting things to change immediately and have drastic change. It's not going to work that way. Turn people off quicker probably than you ever could if you did it a different way.
Yeah, I've heard you give that talk, or you've mentioned that probably at the end of every level too.
What the
don't go back to the gym and change everything you do.
Yeah. You always say you move the rowers, the people are going to get upset.
look, you know, if you have created a safe space at your gym and your people love coming there to work out with you, there's something about that place that they absolutely love. You make one change and it could throw them off and they'll let you know it. And so I'm not opposed to change at all. I'm not opposed to moving rowers or anything like that, but you've got to be very careful about what that could lead to, so to speak. I don't know. But, yeah.
Cody, you got that pulled up?
What's he got pulled up?
What is it?
Alabama in 1990. Chuck Carl, let's watch it. Walk us through this play, Chuck.
Oh, I think I know what this is.
Yeah, it's funny.
All right, Nate, you'll show it on the YouTubes.
Okay,
YouTube. All right, you remember this play?
I do. Yeah.
You know exactly. You know this?
I know.
Oh, they played this at a summit.
I think they did. Yeah. They did.
All right, so where are you?
So I'm one of the cornerbacks. I don't think you can see me. I think I'm already out.
You're
here.
On Georgia. So, you're up by one.
He throws. That's Uh-oh. Me going to intercept.
You right intercepted that?
Yeah. It's fell down, but watch this.
Oh, that high stepping boy. I see him.
So crazy. Yeah.
That's you, 27?
That was me, yeah. It was 82,000 people, Alabama, 1990. Yeah.
Year were you?
Where's that? Is that at UGA?
Junior. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At UGA. Right.
All right.
Between the hedges.
Between the hedges, baby.
So. Something like that happens. What's the party like that night?
Oh, man.
I mean, just girls are, like, throwing themselves.
What?
They're going crazy. They're like, where's number 27 at that interception?
No, man.
This is before Shirley.
Yeah, no.
No?
It's University of Georgia. One of the top 10 party schools.
It is. I can vouch for that. I tried every single one of those bars in the 7 months that I was there, 12 times.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Is that your best play in college football?
Probably the one I'm most known for at Georgia.
What was so outstanding about that?
Number one, it was against the SEC rival, Alabama. Number two, it was the commentator that the video goes with is Larry Munson, who's you know, legendary dog voice. And, you know, it was the fourth quarter. We intercepted the ball and game over. So,
what point in the season is that?
Oh, man, mid-season probably.
So that's there's serious, like, SEC consequences. Yeah,
yep, the complicated, serious.
Yeah. Football, SEC, Southeastern Conference, greatest conference in all of football in the land.
Correct. Is that true?
Yes.
It's a 100%. Fact. It's a statement of fact.
Yeah.
Chuck and I have a disagreement on who the best team in that league is.
Yeah. But you think it's Georgia?
Of course.
And I think it's LSU.
Anything purple is not tough.
We got to go to a game one day. We got to eventually when they play, which they never do. But
do you ever go to games at Georgia?
Yeah, occasionally I'll sneak down there for one. I actually went a few years back to LSU. We used to on Christmas Day wake up and get on a plane and fly somewhere a little bit warmer. We'd fly to Louisiana and went over to see your boys play. They played Georgia.
Because Shirley hit the Delta.
Correct. Yeah. And gotcha. So
that was not recent.
No, that was
a long time because they've not played in Baton Rouge forever.
Maybe 6, maybe 10 years right now.
I think the last time LSU played Georgia at Georgia was when I was there. This is like 2005 probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Like
it's way back.
Yeah. That's when I was living in Athens at that time. Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, ask one more question. Mm-hmm. Fern likes to ask affiliate owners for 1 to 2 pieces of advice.
Yeah, if you like.
But I would generalize it to the greater CrossFit coaching.
Yeah, 1 to 2 pieces of advice. Your call, 1 or 2, whatever you want. CrossFit coaches and or CrossFit affiliate owners that you've learned over the years, talking about. One of the things that Joe kind of closed with is that Joe was kind of closing. He's talking about, hey, there's a, and I think this doesn't only speak to seminar staff, but there are now generations of coaches and box owners in the CrossFit affiliate space. And what he was saying is like, hey, what does that younger generation owe the older generation? Yeah. What does that older generation owe the younger generation? But I think we can kind of think of it that way, but 1 or 2 pieces of advice that you would give the CrossFit community, if you will, that you've learned over the years.
Yeah. So, coaching wise, I would tell you to work with people that don't move well or are broken and work with kids. You'll hone your skill. You'll learn how to scale, faster than you'll learn anything else. You'll learn how to make options available for the community. So work with people that are broken and work with kids would be the first one. For the affiliate owners, I can't tell affiliate owners anything, man. I don't think
that's true.
I can't tell. I haven't owned an affiliate since 2009.
Well, I don't mean like necessarily how to run the affiliate, but like just think of it as from a leadership standpoint, because that is a real struggle for affiliate owners. So what we see very often is that, you know, there's multiple types of affiliate owners that we deal with, but all of them will eventually have to deal with some significant leadership hurdle, mm-hmm. right? Whether the gym's going well or not, eventually there's going to create another version of that affiliate, and they're going to create a different level of this thing, which then presents itself with new problems.
Yeah. So I lean on that again, that I don't think I could tell affiliate owners or anything, but if there is one thing I would tell you, okay, if I had to nail it down to one thing, it would be to protect your culture at all costs.
I mean,
that's good.
I mean, if you think about the panic emails that we get,
they're mostly about that.
Yeah.
It's never like, oh, I got an emergency. Someone's knees are caving in. You know, it's always something like about a coach, a member.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Chuck, for the greater CrossFit community, we thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you. Appreciate what you do. Appreciate what you've done for the community. Appreciate what you've done for me.
Yeah,
same.
Yeah, personally.
Two-way street, brother.
Yeah. And
what would Chuck do?
What are we going to do to celebrate 600?
Ooh. I don't know. We should go somewhere.
I'm in.
Yeah. Somewhere warm.
I'm in.
Okay. We should go to a football game somewhere warm.
I'm definitely in.
Done.
Okay.
Done.
Deal. Man. All right, let's do it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chuck. Right.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the Best Hour of Their Day podcast. We appreciate you listening and choosing to have us help you in your passion for coaching and affiliate ownership. You can find more episodes just like this on all podcast platforms. If you're interested in learning more, you can reach out to us on any social media platforms, or you can visit www.besthouroftheirday.com to book a call. If you found this episode helpful for you, please share it so that we can help other coaches and affiliate owners to help build a bigger and stronger CrossFit community. Thanks for listening.